Hi guys, you're listening to The Last Set with Jack and Joe. Today we're doing MMA Hour number four. We've just watched a really entertaining UFC card. It was UFC 251. How are you feeling about it, Joe?
It was a great start to the card. The main event was really, really good, but the final fight between Street Judas and Kamaru Fake Newsman was a bit questionable. I mean, let's right off the bat start talking about that. It didn't. You were right. Right before the fight, you said to me, if Kamaru Usman realizes that he can't do the stand-up game with Jorge Masvidal,
I said when he realizes,
he's going to go straight to the ground. And man, you could not be any more right, because that's exactly what happened.
It's exactly what happened, because we knew. Well, we saw in round one, Masvidal. You know, it was like still close-ish. But Masvidal definitely pulled ahead. And then the rest of the fight, it was just all Usman. Now, it wasn't the most super entertaining fight because I didn't feel in the clinch. Usually when you see Jones in the clinch, because I saw that Jones was saying, oh, it looks like me in the clinch. When Jones is in the clinch, he's in the clinch and he's always ripping with elbows and shots. I didn't find Usman was super active. I found he was doing a lot of foot stomps. Jorge's toes must be really sore.
Yeah.
and he was also just doing, he was doing shoulder strikes, but they weren't really like, it wasn't with a, when we saw him with McGregor against Cerrone, it was his whole body behind it. With Usman, it wasn't. It was kind of just, it was staying active. The ones that he did do well in the clinch though, was those right body hooks. Body rips to the
the body shots, yeah,
really good,
yeah,
really good. You could see they were taking a bit of air out of it.
Yeah, no, I think he realized that like literally in the first minute of the fight. I was so excited. One thing that really impressed me the most is how calm and relaxed where I was before the first bell even went off. He was looking
the other way.
He didn't give a shit. He was so down, he was so relaxed. Kamaru Usman, he was just like in some sort of like spider stance, crawling into the cage.
That's what he does all the time. He does the similar Jones thing. He does the little spider walk.
Yeah.
And then comes up and takes to the center of the octagon. It was a really good fight.
Yeah.
It was really good. It wasn't exactly what we were expecting. We were expecting...
right in the first 10 seconds, it met the expectations. As Jorge was delivering these massive kicks. He did like... First thing he did, went straight for the knees. Well, straight for a leg kick. Because we know that Kamaru Usman has bad knees. So he wanted to play that to his advantage. Mm-hmm. And he started kicking. And he put in about four or five kicks before... I think he went straight in for the takedown.
Yeah. So earlier before the fight, you'll see in our last podcast, we actually said, I feel like Usman's going to edge out for the decision. He got the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the next fight, Aussie Pride, Alexander Volkanovski. He fought against Max Holloway for the second time. The first fight was a lot more...
One-sided.
Mm-hmm. And I would put the point that it was a lot closer. Would you say rounds one and two definitely went to Holloway?
Definitely.
Rounds four and five definitely went to Volkanovski.
It was more closer in four and five.
Round three
was a bit wishy-washy. But I still firmly believe that Max Holloway won. Now, the reason why is because it was the same issue I had with the Jones fight, Jones versus Reyes. Like, rounds one and two was way, way more Reyes than it was Jones, and that's where I believe it, that he was the more dominant fighter. And now, if you compare the terms in terms of dominance between one and two to his four and five, Reyes still had a higher dominance, and that's what I feel like was the case. Again, I feel like Max Holloway got in way more shots. He was way more calm, and he was getting in a lot more significant strikes in the first two rounds, and I still believe that's what outweighed it in the third and in the fourth and fifth. However, the third round was, yes, a little bit more Volkanovski. I'll give you that. But still, it was a very, very close third round.
I think a lot of people were saying robbery. I think when there was... Obviously, it was by split decision. It wasn't showing... It was unanimous that that Volkanovski won. It was split decision. It was two judges were in Alex's favor, and the rest for the other person for Max. I feel like they could run it back, although it is a 2-0.
Yeah.
However, I think nobody would argue that the second fight was clearly very close.
Yes.
Very, very close. And you could make the argument that Holloway did enough to get round, win 3-2. And then there's some people that are very much, because we also saw the same people that were, there was people going for Holloway. There were some people that were saying Volkanovski won 3-2. It was so close that, no, it was not a robbery. However, I think the general public would have thought that Holloway did enough. Especially since, did he not drop him? He dropped him
twice. Yeah, he dropped him. Yeah, with a head kick.
Dropped him twice. It was a head kick, and then another one was like a short uppercut.
Yes,
that, correct. I feel like the head kick did damage. The uppercut did not. I feel like he was already off balance because he was coming in very close.
Yeah. So here was the other thing that people were arguing against. Well, Volkanovski scored takedowns in the third, the fourth and fifth round.
Uh-huh.
And that was probably, that was where he had some sort of advantage and he was more one-sided. However, I don't believe a takedown is more, would score higher than a, when a knockdown.
No. No. I don't believe so. It depends on the knockdown. It depends on the takedown. The takedown, we found that in some of the early fights, if they take them down and they get right back up, did nothing.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same way you have significant strikes, you should have significant takedowns. Just because there's a takedown doesn't mean you get down, you get back up, you get down, you get back up. It doesn't, and these, when you know how you have significant strikes, we should also make the distinction that there's significant and insignificant takedowns.
Mm-hmm. I also believe that we should add more judges. That was the other thing.
I think maybe like instead of three, have five.
Yeah.
Have five. Mm. You know?
Because then it's more like, it's a lot less because it was a little bit, it looked like it was a little bit more subjective, you know what I mean? Because it was, in terms of the judges' scorecard, it was 47, 48, 47, 48, and then 49, 46 for one of them. And then that was the decider against Volkanovski. And I still, that's why, because it was so close, and once I went for Max, if there was two more judges in there, that would have probably been a draw, most likely, or
one side. I feel like, I don't think anyone would argue for a draw.
I don't think anyone would.
I found it interesting that the reason why I found 4 and 5 were in Volkanovski's favor, I found in 1 and 2, his punches and kicks just weren't hitting the mark. A lot of leg kicks were thrown, they didn't quite make it. Some hands were thrown and they didn't quite make it. In 4 and 5, he started to get Max's awkward timing. Max is really slick. He does a lot of feints. I feel like Alex, he got his timing a lot better in the fourth and fifth, and that's how he started getting these cleaner shots and put on the pressure. Yeah, I was thinking, what did you also think about Petr Yan versus Jose Aldo?
Fuck, that was hard to watch, man. I feel like the ref should have stopped that fight a lot earlier. Look, I mean, I know hats off to Aldo. Aldo is a legend. He's been around for a long, long time. He was probably one of the greatest fighters at in the division. He was probably the greatest fighter at one point, pound for pound.
Yeah. He's definitely in top three. In top three, 100%.
He's going to go down in history. But the way that, that Petr Yan fight, they should have stopped that fight a lot earlier. And the reason why is because the position that Aldo was in, he was literally on his knees covering his face on both sides.
There was about 2 minutes of, probably about 1 to 2 minutes of unanswered shots.
Yeah, and if you look at the canvas, his face was like dug into the canvas. When you're in that vulnerable of a position and he's just delivering all these shots to you, like, the ref's got to make the call. Yeah, and he made the call really late.
I found it made a bit late. I thought a lot of people, because you can also see the fighters talking about it as well on the Twitter pages and that they also agreed. I thought it was a fairly late stoppage. I think they really could have made the argument. I think the commentators were making quite a polite thing. Like, they were politely saying, you could make the argument that it should have been stopped. It really should have been stopped a bit earlier. I felt like there was a lot of unanswered shots. He wasn't doing anything. He was on his side.
Yeah.
Then he rolled over. Yan took his back. And he had just had both hands up on his ears. Mm-hmm. He wasn't intelligently fighting. And I think a little bit later, as it got drawn out, he came to a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure. It was interesting. Remember in round one, Aldo was on the ground and Petr Yan was in a quite dominant position and he hit him in the body and he did a slow-mo on Jose's face. you could see just that right hand to the body. And we were also saying when we were watching the fight, Aldo's thick.
Yeah,
his back and his traps, his lats, his rear delts,
massive.
He's so cut as well at 135. Even though he's got a nutritionist, he's probably at 140, high 140s, low 150s on the night.
Like there was a massive size difference between the two of them, basically.
And Jan, just, that looks like Jan's natural weight. It does not look like Aldo's.
Yeah, Aldo definitely did make a really extensive cut. He shouldn't just chucked him on, chucked his board shorts and put him on the bodybuilding stage, because he almost looked like he was a physique competitor at one point.
He was shredded, and his back is, when you compared like him versus Jan, Jan doesn't have that muscular body. However, I think it worked with the amount of pace he throws out.
Yeah.
He throws a really good pace. You can see Aldo, I think in the fourth round, you can see him breathing a little bit heavier.
Mm-hmm.
And Jan kept the pace, kept going. He also did some quite interesting takedowns as well.
Yeah.
They were like very awkward. They weren't quite hip throws. They were kind of, he caught one of the legs and he kind of tried to sweep out the other leg, but he did it in a very awkward way that a lot of people don't actually use. Yeah.
The one thing I liked the most about that fight, it was a massive chess game between the two of them. Mm-hmm. Like there was a lot of strikes being delivered from the flat foot. There wasn't a lot of body movement, there was some switching stances, but predominantly that they were like, it was almost like watching a Muay Thai fight from the position. Mm-hmm. Now, I told, before the fight, we were discussing Peter Allen's training camp. He went to Tiger Muay Thai in Phuket, and you could tell by the way that he was fighting, he definitely was taking that Muay Thai style approach to the fight.
I think so. They're usually fairly flat-footed, moving forward. They only move forward or diagonally, and that's kind of it. They move forward. They don't really move side to side. They don't really travel on the ball of their foot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Out of Phuket and Tiger Muay Thai. They're really well known for training really good Muay Thai fighters. A lot of the time, these Muay Thai fighters in the UFC, they only move forward and diagonal. They don't really move on the ball of their toes and move around, compared to people like Max Holloway and Conor McGregor that have a much more dynamic fighting style, or the Dominic Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a tough guy. He's out of Siberia. He's such a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's now just won the bantamweight vacant title after Henry Cejudo retired. I see his next fight being Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. Aljamain Sterling is a really, really tough competitor. He won his last fight in the first round by rear naked choke.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a legit contender. I can definitely see him fighting. But one thing I love right now is the resurgence of the bantamweight division.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming increasingly stacked now since we got the return of Cody Garbrandt. We've got...
It was a bit weird after a while because we lost... TJ Dillashaw, and we lost Dominic Cruz, because Dominic Cruz often has injuries and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
TJ Dillashaw, he had his issues with with taking he took an anemia medication for like people that have anemia, which has erythropoietin, EPO. That heavily improves your fitness level, which is probably just because he's used it because he was also cutting and he really needed to cut. I saw recently something on, and he said TJ Dillashaw would cut about, I think it was 8 pounds in 40 minutes. He would cut that in 40 minutes.
Wow, that's impressive.
Really impressive. And it goes to show, in order for him to work that hard, because he was killing himself to get down to that.
He really was
killing himself. So when he got down to that weight, he really did need to take that medication in order, He had to supplement with EPO to get down to that level. It just wasn't a natural weight.
It wasn't a natural weight. But the thing is, the guy's already a small dude and the guy's already ripped when he fights. Then he wants to get even down lower.
He said he was about 150 on the night.
Yeah.
150 on the night. What was he fighting at, 125?
Yeah.
He's bumped up 25 pounds.
On the night. So he must have really, really rehydrated and it must have had a great effect. Obviously, because we know that when So in terms of when it comes to water weight, obviously muscle holds more water than fat. That's why when it comes to guys who are trying to get their weight down, usually the ones who have obviously a higher, a low percentage of, those who have a greater amount of muscle mass, they can obviously get down a lot better because of the amount of water that's been stored in the muscles. And also it's also easier to rehydrate. So that's why technically when we see weight cutting, it's usually a lot of fighters that have a really like a more fat, higher fat mass.
Well, the one that do quite well is like Paulo Costa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Big muscle man, Yo Romero. These guys that are absolutely huge because they do all the they do a similar thing. They do a lot of water loading. So before the fight, they're drinking a ton of water, way more than they would naturally do it, way too much. And they would probably have, maybe some sodium and things like that to have a bit of water weight. And then as they get closer to the fight, they bring the drinking level a lot lower until before the fight they don't do anything at all. Mm-hmm. And it tricks the body because the body thinks it's still having the same amount of water. So it continues to urinate and lose it through sweat. Mm-hmm. So that by the time it comes to weighing in on the ceremonial weigh-ins, they can meet that level because they've tricked their muscle into letting go of this excess fluid.
Do you believe that they should change the weight cutting system in the UFC? I think it's a little bit questionable because
UFC keeps it. I think they keep it because they like to see a weird matchup.
Yeah, that's the thing. And also, if you're someone who can weight cut with that system and drop a lot of water weight, then you can make a fight on short notice.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
You can.
Yeah, and basically because a lot of your body is water, and like I said again, but it's incredibly dangerous if you're a small person and a lot of your weight is in muscle mass, and then you're losing all that muscle mass and you're trying to get even smaller, like it was the case with TJ Dillashaw. It is really, really dangerous.
He was shredded. Absolutely shredded.
Yeah. But the thing is, the reason why people question it so much is because weight cutting methods like, using the sauna, raising your heat body temperature, it can cause things like heat stroke, and that can also result in death. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think your body core temperature, if it gets, I don't know the exact physiology.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 37 degrees Celsius, but if it goes over by 1 or 2 degrees, you're becoming hypothermic.
Either, correct, yes.
And that can 100% lead to a lot of really serious complications that can lead to death.
Yeah.
It is really serious, and I think it is such a mental thing to be stuck in that sauna when you absolutely everything in your body is telling you get out of that sauna, get out of that sauna. And you see on the Ultimate Fighter, there's a lot of at the start Ultimate Fighter, a lot of these guys are getting dragged into the sauna, and that guy will try and get out. He says, I can't do it.
Have you seen that video of Chuck Liddell literally sitting with his back to the sauna door so the guy can get out?
Yeah.
Oh, it's dangerous because
it's their fault. If you're on the Ultimate Fighter and you're going and you come in at I'm sorry for cutting you off, but but if you are on the Ultimate Fighter for a 145 pound division or a 155 or 170, and they come in like 20 pounds overweight when they know previously that is the division they're working in. And then they put all kinds of temptations. You see on the Ultimate Fighter, they still have cake and things out.
Yeah.
And it just shows the ones that have discipline, the ones that actually really want to be there, do keep an eye on their weight.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who one of the best let's talk about the Ultimate Fighter for a second.
Yeah.
One of the best fighters ever to come out of the Ultimate Fighter, Michael Bisping.
Mm-hmm.
The Ultimate Fighter was a successful
Diego
show.
Diego Sanchez, season one.
Robert Whittaker, Ultimate Fighter Nations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, DJ, I've got to tell you a story. The first ever Ultimate Fighter I watched was the Ultimate Fighter Nations between England and Australia. Sorry, Britain and Australia. And representing the coach for Britain was Ross Pearson, and representing the coach for Australia was George.
I like Ross Pearson. He's a good fighter. He's good,
yeah. And George Stropinopoulos. Stropinopoulos. I think that's how you pronounce it. Yeah, good on the second time. And Robert Whittaker, I believe it was in one of his first or his second fight, he knocked the dude out in the first minute.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great fight. And then he carried on all the way through to the end of the season. And I believe that he couldn't fight in the finale because of an injury. But then I might need to fact check myself on that. But he came back. But I know for a fact that afterwards he started his reign, his run in the UFC, and he made it all the way to the title. Again, Michael Bisping story.
Well, he was first in welterweight.
Yeah.
He started off in welterweight. He had some success, but it wasn't nearly the amount that he had in middleweight. When he went to middleweight, quickly became champion.
Mm-hmm.
I want to come back to him because he's fighting soonish on Fight Island against Darren Till. I want to come back to that because you'll know him as well because you're also an English guy.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to clean up on UFC 251. So we also had two other female big fights.
Mm-hmm.
So we had it's the number one candidate to fight. It would be Zhang Weili, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it was Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrade. We predicted that Rose was going to win by decision.
Mm-hmm.
She did.
She controlled the pace of that fight, which was really impressive.
Very good. Yeah. She's always got good distance control. Mm. Really good at getting in and out, in and out.
And very good footwork as well.
Good footwork. She's got cardio as well because she keeps a pace. And it's probably not that hard because Jessica Andrade, she looks like she was 10, 15 pounds heavier.
She was shorter than Rose Namajunas. And she was also a lot more muscular. Like she had really, really big legs.
I don't know how much weight Rose really cuts.
Yeah, I think that's a natural weight for her.
Well, there's no division lower. She might have to eat up. I don't know. That was a really good fight as well. She was really good at distance control. A lot of her hits were, a lot of her punches were just hitting the mark. It was a really good fight. I would have liked to, originally, Jessica Andrade was losing up in their first fight. Jessica Andrade was losing up to the point until she did knock out Rose.
Mm-hmm.
It was glad to see it go the full three rounds. It was quite decisive that Rose is better than Andrade at this point in time.
Do you reckon they might force a trilogy?
No.
I don't think so.
They could. They could. It is only, and I'm looking really far in the future, if Rose can do enough to beat Zhang Weili.
Yeah. Well, I reckon Rose versus Zhang Weili would be a good fight in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It would be great for the women's division. But I feel like Zhang Weili I think the UFC is more targeting a rematch between Zhang Weili and Joanna Jędrzejczyk because that was probably in the greatest female fight I've ever seen. Probably if I could pick a top 10 fights from this decade, from 2010 to 2020, that would be up there.
The fight with Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Yeah. Well, because it's just the amount of shots that both of them traded.
The size of that hematoma on
the very end. And that saved the card. I mean, a lot of people were very upset with the Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero fight.
It also kind of set the bar really high for Yoel Romero versus Israel Adesanya. And then a lot of people hyped up that fight anyway, and it just didn't meet them up because it was very difficult for Adesanya to be a counterpuncher to a guy that didn't really want to engage. Yeah.
And for the women's division, the men's division in the UFC has like a much, much bigger head start. And now we're starting to see like this expansion in the women's division. But the biggest argument people have against the women's division is that there's a lack of talent pool. And that's
changed so quickly.
It has changed. And I want to continue to see this to grow. One thing I might want to see in the future is maybe a heavier women's category.
Well, the highest is featherweight at 145. Because the lioness Amanda Nunes, she has two weight division belts. She has featherweight and she has bantamweight.
Do you reckon her time's done?
No.
No.
I don't think so, and I really hope not. I think you wanted her to retire on top.
Yeah.
I feel like she's not done.
Yeah.
Do you know what her age is actually? I'll look it up.
Yeah. But one thing I've got to give respect is like Amanda Nunes, if that woman retired tomorrow, I would just have absolute full respect for her.
She's 32. So she's in her peak.
There you go.
Now, I think it's such a shame if she stops.
Mm.
I think it's such a shame.
Because like she's cleared everyone out. She's now probably the greatest female UFC fighter in the world. It's going to be a while before we even get someone who's close to her caliber. So if she just keeps going, she's going to keep setting the bar higher. But I, I, I don't know about the people who are below her. They just may never reach her level.
I was speaking to you when we were watching the fight, after all the fights went over, and I said, isn't it interesting that Usman, his undefeated record, doesn't lose his O. He beats Jorge Masvidal. Alexander Volkanovski, undefeated in the UFC, wins against Max Holloway, doesn't lose his O. Petr Yan versus Aldo. Petr Yan's undefeated in the UFC. Doesn't lose his O, wins against Aldo. A lot of people said, oh, these are the three undefeated fighters. Which one's going to lose their O? UFC 251, no one lost their O. No one did.
You know, I was just thinking to myself, you know who could potentially be a great next fight for Alexander Volkanovski if he doesn't, what's it called, if Magnum rematch doesn't go through? Zabit.
Oh, I love Volkanovski, but when I saw Zabit the first time, because I quite like, because I come from a freestyle taekwondo background, he does really well at, I really appreciate his footwork, his pace, and the ability that he can mix in really good like karate and taekwondo, kicking at a high level, at a high pace, with that kind of Sambo style wrestling. He is such trouble for Volkanovski. He's such trouble. I would really like to see Zabit versus Ortega.
Maybe, or if, let's say hypothetically, we do a, if Max Holloway was to get a rematch against Volkanovski, he would have to go through Zabit first.
I would love that fight.
That would be a great fight. And then if Max beats, and then the winner gets to go fight Alexander, because I feel like now giving, Max, you know, a rematch after the first fight, and then giving another trilogy, that kind of makes it really unfair for the guys in the rest of the division.
I think it kind of holds up the division as well.
Exactly. So I feel like maybe we need, and because there's some rising, it's a great division, the featherweight. It's probably one of my favorite divisions. You've got some big names in there. We got, Josh Emmett, who we saw fight a couple of weeks back. Great fight. Definitely someone to keep eyes on. We got Brian Ortega, who hasn't fought for a while.
For quite a while, because he lost to Max all the way.
Yeah, so I'm still eager. So maybe if, hypothetically, if Max wanted to get that featherweight title shot again, he would have to fight Zabit or Brian Ortega, or even better, Brian Ortega fight Zabit.
Also, another big one is Calvin Kattar, and he's fighting in a couple. Oh, actually, no, I'll bring that up later in the podcast.
Yeah.
But Calvin Kattar is fighting Dan Ige in the future. I'm really excited for that one. So what I'd also like to mention is that Paige VanZant recently, today she lost against Amanda Ribas. I think that's how you pronounce her name. I was telling you, round one stoppage in the, around the first 2 minutes. Maybe two to 3 minutes, I think. It was the third minute, and she lost by a quite an unusual armbar. It was a belly down armbar. Did really, really well. Paige didn't really look like it was her fight that night. It really wasn't. I found that Rivas just had the pressure. She did really well. I don't know how many strikes were really thrown, but I feel like Rivas she obviously dominated. It didn't last. It was a 3 minute fight, but Rivas she dominated up to that point, and then she got into quite an unusual armbar on the ground, and she tapped. She won. So, actually, can you check for me, Amanda, what ranking is she right now? It should be in the flyweight division. It is not that. Okay, well, we'll have to fact check that in the future. Should be a flyweight fight. Ah, don't worry about it. So Amanda Ribas, she's 10-1 actually. Really big prospect as well. I'd love to see her fight again. She did really well against Paige VanZant. Paige VanZant has a win over, is it Rachel Ostovich? I think that was her last fight. And I think she won by submission. So really, really good fight by Amanda Ribas. It was a very short fight, so we didn't really get to see her whole arsenal for how long she's trained for. Excellent fight again, though. Okay. It's been really big news in the UFC as well, because, you know, we've also had UFC 4 The Game come out.
The trailer was released.
Well, the trailer was released, but the game is coming out and they've released a couple of photos for it. I don't think you're a huge fan of it. However, we also have downloadable characters like boxers. And two famous boxers would be Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. So that's huge news. I found it weird that they only had them. I would have liked to also have, Deontay Wilder and all different boxers like that. And, just tons of other boxers, even like Mike Tyson.
Or Canelo, or maybe Canelo, Mayweather.
Mayweather as well. Why is Mayweather not in a UFC 4?
Probably couldn't pay him enough money.
No, probably not. Probably not. No,
he'd be like, yep, I'll do it for $1 million or $100 million. And they'd be like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. We pay our fighters less just to actually fight.
Also, we had Venom replaced the... Well, a couple of weeks back, we were talking about the Reebok deal.
Mm.
And I said my prediction was that they weren't going to keep it. They weren't going to keep the Reebok deal. It just wasn't working out that well for the fighters and things like that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if this deal is going to be different, but Venom has stepped in to fill that spot that Reebok had. They actually released a little thing. They said, "Oh, we were here, but we never left."
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what Venom's contract is now. Yeah, with the UFC. It'd be huge.
I mean, well, because Venom is definitely a really good sport fight brand. But it's not as big as Reebok. Reebok's been around for a long time.
I was expecting Under Armour or Nike. Maybe not Nike because that tends to go towards the basketball. So does Under Armour. But I expected Under Armour. It's a huge growing sport. I'm sure they put a little deal in.
Because I'm pretty sure Under Armour sponsored Anthony Joshua.
Did they?
We've seen him in ads. Yeah, so they're involved in the fight game. Uh-huh. So maybe a DS, but a DS focuses more on things like, football, soccer, really.
Yeah.
And, what's the other one? Yeah, those are the main ones, really. Nike's more mainly basketball.
Puma
could do it, but I don't feel like there is as big...
Adidas, no. Nike, no. Well... it's great to see Venom's, back in the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Expecting great things from that. I don't know when it starts. Do you know when the Venom actually starts? Because when we were watching UFC 251, obviously it's a really recent deal. Mm-hmm. So I very much doubt everyone gets their new fight kit from Venom.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know, I don't think we have any, there's no information right now about when Venom is now going to be, visibly partnered with the UFC because they were still wearing the Reebok stuff at the UFC 251 fight today. I also had, let's talk about Mike Perry. It wasn't that long ago that we were talking about Mike Perry.
Oh my God. Mike Perry and Conor McGregor should get together.
For that elder weight.
Yeah. There's a double tag team fight against them. Against two, a whole retirement home.
Like a round robin and they just throw the next ugly person at them.
I just thought to myself, there's a movie out there that I used to watch as a kid. It's one of my favourite movies. It's Happy Gilmore. Played by Adam Sandler, and Happy Gilmore chucks his grandmother in old folks home, Ben Stiller plays a character as like the old folks caretaker, and he would say something, you go to sleep or I'll put you to sleep. I think Mike Perry should just take his spot.
Dora was giving me some other vibes as well. We were talking about this. I watched Hot Fuzz the other day, which is surprisingly a really funny movie with Simon Pegg. I was watching it with my girlfriend and we laughed because he jumped up and flying side kicked the poor granny in the face. She's holding her shotgun. He just runs out. And that, it was giving me vibes from that. It was really, it sounds really funny when we talk about it like this, but actually it's quite serious. Apparently he's assaulted a couple of people. The UFC is going to,
investigate
and correct this situation.
Because the thing is, I'm not excusing what he does, but the problem that I have with this generation is that when we see a video on social media, it's completely taken out of context, So we don't know what was going on before.
We know a tiny bit. We know that beforehand, he went and tweeted out against people coming into his personal space because of coronavirus. He said, anyone that comes near me or touches me, they're going to get smacked, right? And then you kind of put up quite a provocative kind of tweet because you're actually kind of like inciting someone to come at you, which, well, did happen. A couple of people started, you know, getting at him and lunging at him. I'm like, maybe don't lunge a UFC fighter because he's going to smack you in the mouth. Especially, you know, a more aggressive fighter that does like to think of himself definitely as a street fighter. So don't lunge at him or he's going to smack him. And then I think they got escorted out. They got escorted out of the premises. The old man said, we reposted it on our Instagram account. And the old man, was talking to Mike Perry, and Mike Perry goes, shut up, I'll knock your old ass out. And the old man says, I'd like to see you try. Well, funnily enough, that old man did get his ass knocked out.
If you're going to talk the talk, be ready to walk the sidewalk.
Well, exactly. And, he hit the sidewalk. Don't excuse it. It's clearly assault. It's clearly a very big public matter. I'd like to get it sorted out properly. And just because you talk a bit doesn't mean you have the right to go out and smack people, especially people who are elderly, because you're supposed to respect your elders. The elderly guy kind of inciting a bit, and then did get smacked, but doesn't mean you go around assaulting people. Yeah. Everyone that talks. It talks a bit of shit,
There's no excuse for it, really. I mean, but
it was funny seeing the memes about it. Funny. I'm not gonna lie. When I saw Elder Weight title fight between Conor McGregor and Mike Perry, it was funny. All these memes, these internet memes, especially MMA and UFC memes, they make light of quite
serious. Well, they can fight each other because they're both welterweights.
They are welterweights now.
Oh shit. So
apparently Mike Perry wants to go to middleweight, so unless Conor McGregor wants to get on the juice. I don't think they're gonna fight anytime soon. I also wanted to bring up so we knew that Figueiredo, he fought against Joseph Benavidez, but he didn't make weight in his previous fight. So it was a title fight, but he was fighting the champion, but not for the title because he clearly missed weight. Now, I believe he knocked out Benavidez.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're running it back. Figueiredo was going to fight Benavidez at a UFC Fight Island card.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's out due to a positive coronavirus test. We know a lot of coronavirus tests have actually been testing positive. We know, I think Jorge Masvidal, I think he tested, his head coach tested. I think he was out for some reason. I believe it was a positive COVID test. A lot of them are testing positive, and it's not a good sign for, a lot of future cards in that. I believe, though, we're also having Sean O'Malley fighting, I think it's Marlon Vera.
That's going to be a good fight. I mean, right now, a lot of people have got eyes on Sugar Sean O'Malley.
As the next, superstar of the UFC.
Well, potentially. He's got that eccentric nature that everyone loves about certain fighters.
He definitely leans into it as well. He definitely knows what he's doing. Especially how, I think it's his natural personality, and then he leans into it a bit. The same way Conor McGregor did the exact same thing, had a bit of fun and then kind of leaned into that personality and built some big fights. I mean, Sean O'Malley, he's trying to fight people in the top 10, top 15 and things like that. He's not at a title fight yet, and yet people already know his name. And it definitely brings a lot of, casual fighters in, because I think a lot of people, you could ask them, who's some of these fighters? Who's some of the other names in the bantamweight division? And I don't think they'd know.
I'll tell you what, who would be a really, really great fight to watch. Sugar Sean O'Malley versus Cody Garbrandt. That would be
I think Sugar Sean O'Malley was trying to set that up. He was trying to, have the little seed for that in the future.
But the thing is, we've got to understand, is Sean O'Malley is only 14th on the rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Cody Garbrandt is 5th. However, he recently just came off a win, but he had two losses before that. So
yeah.
But the thing is with Sean O'Malley is, guys.
Who had two losses?
Cody Garbrandt.
No, he had three.
Oh, three losses.
He lost to TJ twice.
Oh, there you go. So three losses. So that's why rankings, you know, you can't always depend on it. I'll give you that.
Rankings aren't everything. They're not everything, because we've seen quite often number three fighter fights the number eighth fighter and things like that.
But here's the thing I don't want. I don't want Sean O'Malley to be rushed.
He knows that. He's actually mentioned he doesn't want... I think it was on the Brendan Schaub show. And he was saying, you know, I understand I don't really need to be rushed at this point. I think he's just enjoying the process, and he's picking up a lot of hype around him.
Mm-hmm. He took a couple of years off.
He did, but, you know, this was due to, you know, some USADA stuff, which is unfortunate as well. I was going to bring up something for the LFA, but I did want to bring up, because we're obviously in Australia. I was born in Australia. I would still consider you Australian, even though you were not born in Australia. We are big fans of Mark Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Hunt has actually signed up for a boxing fight with Paul Gallen. I believe that's coming up in the next couple of months. Let me please check. Are you a big fan of Mark Hunt yourself?
Yes, I am. Well, he's probably the king of the walk-offs, you know.
Definitely.
He's got a very, very extensive background in just the fighting game in general. He was a kickboxer. He went to the UFC. He had some problems with the UFC. I believe it's one of his last recent fights, which was quite a few years back, when he fought against Brock Lesnar. What happened was Brock Lesnar tested positive for steroids, and Mark Hunt demanded that he get basically all of his Brock Lesnar's purse, because Brock Lesnar got a lot of money just to show back up, you know, for promotion. And then the UFC said no. So what happened was he actually threw the book at them, and he lost in that case.
Mark Hunt's actually got two ongoing cases right now still against the UFC. Mm-hmm. One was similar. I think he was doing something similar to, you know, the LA, I think it was the LA Act, which is what they used in boxing for the fighters to get a little bit more pay in that. I just brought it up now. So we know Paul Gallen, he's an ex-Australian rugby player.
Uh-huh.
But he turned a pro boxer, I think it was in, I think it was it 2014? Let me quick check. 2014, yeah, I was right. So he's got an undefeated record. He's 9-0, I think he's had one, I think it was changed to a no contest. Mark Hunt, he has an 0-1-1 record as a professional boxer from 1998 to 2000. That's 2 years. Not really long, a huge space of time. We know Mark Hunt is a really impressive stand-up fighter. He's got dynamite in his hands. And that power does not go away. He is the Super Samoan. I understand Gallen. He's an older gentleman, just as well as Mark Hunt is, you know, a bit older as well. If this does take place, because it hasn't been finalized, it's apparently going to maybe come around October 30th or October 31st, so around Halloween. There's rumors that it might be in the Spark Arena in Auckland or New Zealand. So that would be an incredible fight to see. I'd love to see Mark Hunt fight again, because we haven't seen him in such a long time. We haven't seen him. He hasn't fought since 2008 in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see him fight again, because he is the king of the walk-offs. He does it so well. And he's a really exciting fighter. He doesn't take a back step.
No.
He comes forward. He comes to fight.
He was the thing is with Mark Hunt, he was always known as the guy with probably one of the best chins in the UFC. And because he's had an extensive fight record, he's been fighting for years and years.
Exactly.
And he was one of the people that just could has probably one of the best durability in terms of the UFC. Until there were some times where it did get cracked, and I understand that. But he's still a very beloved and respected fighter across all the fight games.
Oh, exactly. Mark Hunt's he's a Kiwi fighter. Obviously, a lot of Australians will definitely go for him. And they'll also go for Paul Gallen as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, because we're Australians, there's not a whole lot of Australian and Kiwi talent. Not just in terms of volume in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely honed in on Mark Hunt. and his Samoan, you know, descent and that. He did really well in K1. He had a, you know, they were saying, you know, he's got a granite chin. He's and he's got dynamite in his hands, and he comes forward to fight, and he's got power. He's got that power. I'd love to see him fight again. I'd love to see him fight again. Yeah, what were you thinking?
If Paul Gallen fights, I'll definitely watch it. It's just I haven't really watched any of Paul Gallen's fights. I don't know too much about his career record, but they're both
older
gentlemen, so I can definitely see the fight happening. I've got to go with Mark Hunt just because he's more experienced, you know.
Paul Gallen, he became a boxer later in life, whereas Mark Hunt, he's been doing this for a long time. You know, that kind of experience.
But then you got to ask again, how many hits can Mark take? You know, obviously his chin's not as good as it used to be.
Which is natural because he's done so many fights. He has, like any fighter, they take punishment in any fight. You know, we're gonna have to see that and how that goes in the future. I also wanted to bring up there was a pretty brutal illegal knee in LFA 84. Now, we don't often watch the LFA. We usually hone in on one championship, the UFC and Bellator. However, we know that there was a fight going on, and during this fight, it was on, I think it was July 10th when they were having this fight. The gentleman that did the illegal knee, he ran up to him really quickly when they were having these exchanges. He was winning the exchanges throughout the fight. He actually looked like he was going to, you know, eventually win the fight if it was by decision. And as the guy was coming up off the floor, he kneed him in the head. Yeah. It was in the LFA. Do you have it there?
Yeah, I'll just quickly get it up.
That's it there. Wow. You can't have the audio there.
Yeah, so that's
okay. Turn the audio off.
I'll just turn the audio off. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why we have these rules in place. And when gets hit with a... Oh, wow. Okay.
So he's wobbling.
Oh!
So he looked like he was about... Exactly.
Oh, he's bleeding from the... Oh, that could have taken out his eye.
So they're going to replay it again. See, look, he's rocked him. Yeah, it almost looks like between the knee and like kind of like a soccer kick.
Oh,
now, it looked like he'd been rocked. He'd fell down. He looked like he was about to get up, and he's about to come up. And I think he was trying to get the kick, or it was in between a knee and a kick. I believe he's still connected with the shin bone. One more time.
Oh,
yeah, it was with the shin. It was in the shin. So it looked like he was about to come up, and he wanted to catch him early while he was coming up. I don't believe he meant to, but it was clearly...
When you're running in that quickly and you're kneeing him, I mean, he must have been excited. He must have felt like, yes, I'm going to get the win. And just... But to do it like that is just... That's almost fatal. That could have killed him. People would probably died for a lot worse.
No.
So for a lot less.
Yeah, of course not.
Especially when he ran. He took about four or five steps before he even got to him.
Couldn't be good for him.
So he did use momentum to deliver the strike, which is even more, makes it more terrifying to watch.
I would give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if it was intentional. It looked like the guy was coming up and he's trying to catch him early. However, it's clearly an illegal blow. And the guy that obviously got knocked out, he's obviously going to need that money that he won from getting the fight. Because it got changed to a win, I believe. Actually, no. I believe it was a DQ. It would be a disqualification, but
it was a DQ.
He'll obviously need that money from his most recent fight to cover his medical fees, because that could not have been good. You get serious vibes of CTE there.
I think that dude, just the look in that dude's eyes when he was knocked out, that was just... That's like...
It's like looking at glass.
Yeah, that was probably... That was so scary, just like... It was almost like, I mean, come on, son, the dude's...
He's out cold.
And he honestly looks like he's No. It lost all sense. His body's limb. It's got a massive cut.
Well, that was the second round in the first minute. First minute of the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you obviously can't blame it on fatigue because they're three round fighters and it was in the early second round. That's upsetting to see because you don't never want to see fighters like end up in that scenario. But that's why we do have those rules in place, especially in places that are established like Bellator, UFC, ONE Championship. ONE Championship I think has different rules. It has different rules for where you can kick, especially if they're on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to bring up one last thing before we go. So recently in Australia and Queensland, there was a speeding tradie, and I believe he got pulled over. And I believe he I'll bring it up, but he apologized. He apologized for. You know, speeding. But the thing was that when he was speeding, it turned out a snake had came out from the back of his ute and slithered in between where his legs were and was trying to, classic Australia, we have a lot of deadly things that can probably kill us from snakes, spiders and etc. So the tradie is trying to go really quickly. He's probably trying to find an area where he can... He's probably just trying to get home, honestly. He's trying to get away from this stupid snake. Yeah, there it is. So it was in Queensland. It wasn't that many days ago. And he has a knife on him. I'm not sure how the tradie has a knife on him. It must be a work knife or something like maybe a Stanley blade. And he's trying to stab at the snake that is trying to bite him. Obviously, you know, very close... where his legs are and where his groiny region is in the seat, and it turns out that when they did pull him over, they found the snake in the back that had slithered its way back, and it was covered in blood. So that it goes to show these tradies, they put up with a lot of shit. They put up with a lot of shit. They you know.
This was on American news as well. Trucker. They used the word trucker.
They use trucker. It's a tradie in a ute. Okay, it's a ute.
Trucker fends off a venomous snake at 70 miles per hour on a busy highway.
Well, yeah. It's Australia. We all live in Australia. We know we've all seen a venomous snake once or twice. And there you go. They say only in Australia. Well,
that was probably the most Australian thing ever.
Well, yeah, a tradie having a knife in his ute, stabbing at...
a brown snake, which is probably one of the most poisonous snakes.
Exactly. He's got to stab the snake that's going to eat, you know, bite his ghoulies. So he's got to look after himself, you know. He's got to protect his balls, and I don't feel bad for that snake. It got what was coming to him because it was trying... There you go. Speeding tradie fights off... A deadly snake with knife. Questionable how he had a knife in his car so close to him.
Whoa, he was driving at 123 kilometers per hour in a 100 kilometer zone. He says a brown snake or a tiger.
23 over the speed limit? He wasn't trying hard enough.
A brown snake or a tiger snake? It's in the back of the U, he says. Yeah. It was in the back with me. I think it's bitten me.
There you go. It's covered in blood. What happened if he didn't have that knife? If he didn't have that knife. So it moved by his legs and it started to try and wrap around him. And I think it was striking at the driver's seat, the one that goes underneath your butt between his legs. And it's trying to, you know, strike. Because you know how with snakes, they curl up. Mm-hmm. They curl together like a slinky. And you're pushing the spring down and they use that to pounce forwards and strike. Really scary for that guy. If he did not have that knife, it could have ended so differently.
Oh. Well, I think that's a pretty good story then to leave the podcast on.
Yeah. Only in Australia, folks. I'm sure there's a lot more to come. And it's probably just a normal, you know, normal Tuesday in Australia.
Yeah, guys. Just want to say thanks so much for tuning in. You know, and yeah, please don't forget to give these videos a like and subscribe and leave a comment. We always do our best to get back to everyone on this, and also we want to hear your feedback from you because we're trying to keep the podcast going.
Yeah.
And yeah, just
please comment and tell us different things, if you thought it was good, even if you thought it was bad. Like, Obviously, don't. Just tell us what you would like to see in the future. If you want to see any of our social media, that'll be in the description below. We're always found on our Instagram. Instagram is probably our main one, or our Facebook page, The Last Set, or our Instagram, which is The Last Set Podcast, all together, lowercase.
All right. All good?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.
Take care. Peace.
Bye.